And joining us now to talk politics are our two regular commentators, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Georgetown University, and David Brooks of the New York Times. Hello to both of you.
Hello. Good to be with you.
E.J., we now have an interesting question, which is it easier to get agreement among 193 countries than among 60 Democrats in the U.S. Senate?
You know, it's funny, when President Obama gave his Copenhagen speech today, he said, "I think our ability to take collective action is in doubt right now," and I thought he was talking about the United States Senate. This is a remarkable process we've gone through, and I think it's actually a process that has not made the Democrats look particularly good, just because it looks so messy.
And this is health care in the U.S. Senate.
Yes, exactly. And it now all hangs, or seems to hang, on one person, Ben Nelson of Nebraska. And what I was told by a senator who knows him well is that Nelson was once upon a time thinking about the cost of voting yes, and now he's very focused on the cost of voting no, that he has some problems. He still doesn't think the abortion restrictions in this are strong enough, even though Senator Casey has been trying to negotiate some with him.
Senator Casey of Pennsylvania.
But that he doesn't, in his heart of hearts, want to stop the action on health care. That's what this Democrat thinks we'll see very soon.
David Brooks, you wrote a column today weighing the pros and cons of the Senate health care bill. The cons won, by your reckoning. I assume that means if you had Senator Nelson's ear, you would say no bill is better than this bill.
Yeah, the cons won at least this week. and I think, you know, a lot of the stuff we've been talking about for the last week is trivial, frankly. To me, the public option, the abortion, that's not the real core of the bill. The core of the bill is, do we fundamentally reform the healthcare system so the incentives aren't so messed up? And I think the bill has some very fine features, covering people, having some cost control within the system. But our system is fundamentally messed up at the core. There's no transparency. People are sheltered from the consequences of their decisions. And as a result, health insurance or health costs have risen as a percent of GDP from 15 to 17 now, up to 22, 24. This bill, according to the actuary for Medicare, would say those health costs will rise even faster. And to me, that's the fundamental problem, which is not solved.
But what would be the consequences of there not being any bill, or would those consequences not be so grave?
Those consequences would be terrible. Because if Obama fails and if Clinton fails, then no one's going to want to do anything. But if we do the easy stuff, such as covering people, without doing the hard stuff, those consequences are also terrible.
EJ?
Right, and I think that's the problem with what we'll describe just for this moment as the David Brooks Howard Dean position, which is that
the bill's not good enough for me.
Right, and that this is one of the rare opportunities to pass a comprehensive health care bill. And the mere possibility of getting insurance to 30 million people who don't have it, and to get rid of the restrictions on people getting insurance because they have pre-existing conditions, a whole lot of other things in this bill are very good. And on the cost side, there is quite a lot in here. I actually agree with David. There are more things that could be done. And there are senators trying to add things to the bill at the last moment to do more about costs. But I think the only way we will ever get to controlling these costs is to have everyone, or almost everyone at least, inside something like a unified system. And I think in the end, a lot of people, including progressives who are now critical, are going to say, we can't walk away from this opportunity to pass something that people have been trying to pass for decades.
David, you want to speak for yourself and Governor Dean now?
Yeah, we're going to California, Ohio. We spend too much on health care in this country. And according to the Medicare actuary, that spending is going to go up. If you care, as I do, say about preschool education, states are going to be so badly squeezed by this bill, you can kiss goodbye to those other programs, which are much more important, which have much bigger social impact. And that's essentially why I have trouble.
Now, EJ, you began by talking about the central role of Senator Ben Nelson, Democrat of Nebraska. But there's another key player whom you've written about. There's been a lot written about him, and that's Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, the independent, formerly Democratic senator. I want to quote back what you wrote in a blog. "I think the evidence is overwhelming that Lieberman double-crossed the Democratic leadership and the rest of his colleagues." It's a strong, strong, strong word.
It is, and I am less of a Lieberman basher historically than most people of my ilk. And I think the fact is that in this case, I am absolutely sure, partly because information I got at the time before any of this became controversial, that when Harry Reid came up with this new approach, all right, we'll get rid of the public option, but we'll have this Medicare buy-in where people 55 to 64 can buy into Medicare, Lieberman said yes, or something that sounded an awful lot like yes. And it made sense because Lieberman had supported this in the past. And Democrats felt burned by him on this in a way they had not felt burned on other things that they were mad about Joe Lieberman for, because they felt that they had finally found a solution to the thorniest problem here, and then he blew it up. And so there's a kind of resentment I heard this week from a lot of Democrats, again, including people who are not necessarily sort of longtime foes of Lieberman, where I think he created a break now that's going to be very hard for him to heal with many of his colleagues.
David,
well,
Senator Lieberman's role
is still there, but I don't really understand it. Max Baucus said months and months ago the votes were not there for the public option. They've never been there for the public option. I don't see why anybody thought they were going to be there for the public option. And the same for the Medicare buy-in. Lieberman was the most out front, but there were a bunch of moderate senators from the Democratic Party who all were against it. And the idea that you could win over the senators with a Medicare buy-in, which is a solution further to the left than the existing proposal, to me was a political non-starter. So I don't understand the anger directed at Lieberman as opposed to all the other 10 senators or so who've always been opposed to these two things.
Just to answer that, there was a view that there were sort of provisions in the buy-in that would have won them over. The leadership was very strongly of the view that they actually had everybody else and that Lieberman's public announcement really broke the deal.
More to come, I'm sure, in the future. David Brooks and E.J. Dionne, thanks a lot once again. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You too.